Are you a good witch or a bad witch?
Hello and welcome to Witch Bitches Review. I am your rapidly aging friend that you will never speak to again after this remarkably bizarre ad for anti-aging cream.
And I'm just like Mary Esty in that I was also never struck by lightning while trying to enter a church. I'm Siren Rex Neenan. This is the podcast where we watch and review a myriad of media based on or surrounding witchcraft, beginning with the original Charmed series. What episode are we talking about today, Tyler?
We are discussing Charmed Season 1, Episode 2. I've Got You Under My Skin, the title of which makes very little sense.
It makes legit no sense. So I love that every episode of Charmed has like a pun in its name, and they tend to be really clever, but we're in the pilot season, so not so much with this one. So I did a little research about the phrase under your skin to see if I could piece out what the hell it had to do with this episode. So what I've got is that the original meaning of the idiom under your skin referred to being irritated, and it was a reference to having burrowing or stinging insects in your skin.
Ew.
Ew. I know, right?
Ew.
So other than the fact that this episode is kind of irritating and the fact that it's maybe the worst episode of a really great show, I don't know how that ties in. So there's a second meeting, all right, and it comes from a Cole Porter song from like the, I don't know what era, I'm sorry, I don't know. But it's old, okay? Older than a millennial would know. And the song is about having a deep and potentially unhealthy obsession with someone, which, again, doesn't exactly tie in with this episode either.
It's a little closer. Like, it's a little closer.
But I don't know, because, so, spoilers. So we're going to be talking about how, you know, Phoebe, like, makes a dumb decision by getting involved with this demon, but is she really, like, obsessed with him, or is she just obsessed with herself? You know?
Because
I think that's what it really meant.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And so then the only other possible thing that I came up with is that was under your skin referring to the minor plot point that involved a tattoo? Like, that's all I've got for you for the title. It's not a great title.
It's not. It doesn't make any sense at all.
Nope.
This episode originally aired on October 14th, 1998. It was written by Brad Kern and directed by John T. Kretschmer.
According to IMDb, this episode ranked 7.5 out of 10, which is pretty high, considering, and is the one where Phoebe can't resist a peek into the future. She and her sisters learn their first lesson in witchcraft. Deadly demons can come in any kind of package, including, quote-unquote, gorgeous male photographers. Tyler, would you describe him as gorgeous, though?
0%?
Yeah.
This is also the episode with the youth sucking Jovna chip frappuccino. I don't care for this episode. There are some interesting plot lines that I'm looking forward to discussing, but I think it's really sloppy in comparison to the first one, especially with the editing.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree. This is probably one of my least favorite episodes, if not my least favorite episode, which is weird because at the same time, it does contain one of my favorite scenes. But other than that, it's not great. Again, we're going to, you know, I'm going to talk like a lot of mad shit, and so is Tyler, because we're both bitches. But just remember that in the back of our minds, we're kind of forgiving because it was the pilot season. It was low budget. They didn't have everything figured out yet. You know, and I think as I talked about at the end of our last episode, what sells this episode is the acting of the three main characters. And without that, it would have been like utter.
Without further ado, let's get into this business. This episode opens at Quake, which is absolutely not the same restaurant that Piper was at last time.
Absolutely not.
I guess, to be fair, we didn't get the name of the restaurant in the last one. They didn't say where she was going. But we did get a shot of the front of the building, and it was not this building.
Definitely not. Well, like, I mean, again, I think we'll let it slide because it was from pilot into series, you know? And maybe they were like, okay, we'll give you the obnoxious French stereotype chef in the pilot. But you really, you just can't make us look at that for all of season one. You just can't.
So, which is accurate in the way that things turn out, because we find out that Piper is running this restaurant and that terrible chef is gone. He left. He left Piper on her own. And then we meet Brittany, who is an important character for literally just this episode, and that's it. Just for the plot. Yeah. That's all she matters for. And then Phoebe comes in and has a vision of a cute boy coming to flirt with her. And then the sisters have this little back and forth of like, we're not supposed to use our powers. And Phoebe's like, no, you and Prue said that we shouldn't use our powers. And I feel like Phoebe is justified in being a little upset right now, because she literally has zero control over when this happens to her. Like, at all.
And yet, don't you feel like she has more control over it in this episode than she does? Like,
oh my god, yeah.
Like, so much. Like, in this episode, she's, like, having premonitions right and left, and they are not even affecting her. She's not doing her stupid thing, you know? And, like, and they're, like, her eyes, like, slamming shut, and I'm like, oh my god, seizure! Like, she's not doing that. She's just, like, looking around, and she's like, oh, I know everything that's about to happen, and I'm gonna use it to my advantage to be a slut. Like, I don't know. I feel like she had perfect control over her powers her in this vision, episode.
Her vision, lack of a better term, was a lot clearer when she had her premonitions in this episode, for sure. But when they come upon her, they're random, right? She doesn't just, like, look into the future whenever she wants.
Yeah, correct. But I don't know. It just seemed like she kind of could.
Yeah, a little bit. It definitely... It was
a little bit.
Again, it's a continuity issue, which this show kind of does a lot. So,
right. So we meet their like friend Brittany in the restaurant, and they're just like, "Oh, it's Brittany! Oh my god, we've known her forever. It's Brittany! Oh my god, look at your tattoo! Brittany has a tattoo. It's crucial. It may or may not be why the episode is titled 'I've Got You Under My Skin,' but I hope not, because it's not that important." So, anyway, Brittany, they're like BFF, who they will never talk to again after this. Leaves the restaurant and immediately gets, like, kidnapped or attacked or whatever in her car. And actually, that scene is really scary, actually. I mean, I've watched it so many times that I'm desensitized to it. But, I don't know, just thinking about, like, a young woman, like, getting into her car and there's, like, an assailant in the back who attacks her, and then it, like, zooms out, and we don't know what happens to her. That's pretty scary and upsetting, quite honestly. And I think watching the scene, like, knowing how the episode is going to turn out makes it less scary, but, like, watching it for, like, the first time is horrible.
Yeah. I guess I'm really desensitized to it as well, because I didn't think about how terrifying that would be. But in real life, I checked the backseat of my car, like, all the time when I would get in it at nighttime. So, I get why it's frightening.
I check the backseat of my car when it is in my garage in the morning. Okay? And I almost want, like, is this episode the reason I do that? Is Charmed one of the reasons I'm afraid of the back of my car?
Maybe. Oh my gosh. Okay, so let's talk about Prue and Andy sleeping together.
Getting steamy, which, as you know, was sort of kind of predicted by the spirit board.
Yes. Thinking about it now, after you had said that last episode, like, thinking about it makes so much sense. And I mean, obviously we knew it was going to happen eventually because he's, like, the love interest or whatever. I don't know, it feels so much more like hot called it now that I have that little piece of information, you know?
Because they blew your mind. I'm used to it. I get it.
Okay. So then we have the opening credits after Prue throws Andy's fucking alarm clock out the window.
Okay. I love that scene because if I had telekinesis, which I may or may not have fantasized about my entire, like, teenage decade, and probably because I was watching Charmed, I would absolutely use it to throw annoying things out of windows. Like, that's the dream.
Is that where the time flies joke comes from? Did it originate here?
It was literally originated by Prue Halliwell, yes.
That's positive. Okay. Okay, so after the credits, we have Piper watching this awful documentary in the kitchen, which we both have a lot of feelings about, but we have to get through some other stuff first.
So many feelings. Yeah. But just remember this documentary, because we are going to blow the damn thing wide open.
After the documentary scene, which we're going to talk about, because this episode jumps around a whole bunch, and there's a lot of weird editing things that make it hard to talk about chronologically. So Siren and I decided to talk about, like, each story individually. So we're going to talk about it as chronologically as possible, but we're going to break down each story by itself first.
Basically what we're telling you is that, like, there are literally like 15 to 30 second scenes, and it jumps around between characters faster than you can keep track of. So we're not going to make you listen to us attempt to describe that. We're going to tell you each individual sister's incredibly fascinating story in the worst episode of Charmed.
So let's talk about this, like, kind of uncomfortable scene where the sisters are sort of slut-shaming each other, kind of. Prue tells her sisters that she slept with Andy, and they start to try to get, like, details on it, which is innocent enough, but just the way that they go about it feels very like they're trying to shame their sister a little bit. And I don't know. I obviously don't care for that. But then Prue kind of turns it around.
A little bit. Well, doesn't Piper, like, flat out just say, "You sleaze"?
And she might.
Like, when she finds out. She calls her a sleaze. I'm almost positive she calls her a sleaze.
Which is just not okay. This is not okay. And then Prue, like, in defensiveness, starts to turn it around on Phoebe, who was out all night with a boy.
You kind of have to remember that they're sisters, and sisters will tease each other over anything, even if they don't really mean what they're saying. My sister and I talk to each other like that all the time, and we're both very sex-positive people. I think, so the way I read it, okay, so I'm an older sister, you know, and I like to act like I'm better than everyone else, just like Prue, and I like to, like, you know, nag people for the things they do wrong, just like Prue. So if, say, I did something that I had been nagging my little sister about doing, she would absolutely throw it in my face. And I kind of feel like that's what it is here. Because Prue is so, like, domineering, I'm always right, do as I say, don't be so irresponsible, you know?
Yeah.
So then when she does something sort of irresponsible, they have to, like, rub it in her face that she's human too.
That definitely makes sense. And I feel like I could have been a little bit more open to the way that they were talking to each other. I guess I didn't really take into account the fact that they were sisters teasing each other when I was watching this. I was just sort of like, this is really uncomfortable to watch. But I guess anytime I've ever been with, like, a group of friends and they were fighting with their sibling, I was really uncomfortable. So I guess that's just secondhand embarrassment for me.
That tracks. Well, I mean, I think it's understandable, but I also think that you're picking up on something real. So we also have to remember the context of when this show was made. It was the 90s. Well, it was the late 90s, but it was still the 90s. And, you know, one of the sexual revolutions that we've gone through recently in American history was just in the 80s. So at that time period, America is becoming accustomed to talking about sex on TV and having promiscuous or sexually free characters on TV, but at the same time, you know, they're sort of negotiating their own morals. So, like, yeah, they let Prue have a one-night stand, which, like, 10 years earlier would have been an absolute, like, debacle if it had happened on television, you know? So they let her do that, but then there's just a little bit of, like, backsliding, like, oh, let's talk about how this is unwise, or you should feel ashamed, or blah, blah, blah. It's hegemonic negotiation, basically. We can have these sexually free characters on TV, but we also sort of have to shame them so the audience doesn't feel like it's okay, you know? So at this point, we're going to break into the three separate stories that happen simultaneously in this episode for a while. And we're going to start with Piper's because it's the one that Tyler is real passionate about right now.
This is sort of when Piper's story starts, is she is watching this documentary in the kitchen after the opening credits. It's a documentary on the witch trials that mentions Mary Esty. And that is the only factual thing about this documentary.
Is that Mary Esty was a real person, you're saying? Like, that's the only factual thing?
Is that Mary Esty was a real person? Yeah, is the only factual thing about this whole documentary that she's watching. And it's not very long, but what it talks about really affects Piper. And the way that we manipulate this, you know, past event for media influences a lot of people in thinking about witchcraft. And I want to give some space for Mary Esty as a person. Mary Esty was a victim in the genocide of the Salem witch trials. And we hear her name tossed around quite a bit. She's named in The Crucible in Act 4. Her name is dropped in The Conjuring in relation to a satanic witch, which is not accurate at all. And here in Charmed. However, Mary Esty was more than likely not a witch at all. Most accused during this grim time period were not. She, as well as her two sisters, Rebecca Nurse, 1621 to 1692, and Sarah Cloyce, 1648 to 1703, were all defendants and ultimately victims in the witch trials. Mary Esty was born on August 24th, 1634, and ultimately was put to death by hanging September 22nd, 1692, at the age of 58. The documentary mentions her being burned, but that form of punishment didn't occur in Salem. It was much more common throughout Europe in centuries prior. Though both forms of punishment are barbaric and unsettling, I think it does a disservice to the victims to be inaccurate in telling their stories.
I don't know of anyone historically who was ever burned for witchcraft in America. We like to hang people here. I guess it requires less raw materials. You know, the wood to use to burn the witches, they probably needed to get through the winter, and, you know, plus they had to go and, like, chop down the trees on the land that they had stolen from the Native Americans. It's a whole big thing.
The whole thing.
So anyway.
It's a whole thing. Yeah, nobody...
Burning witches is just not cost-effective here in America.
It is not. It is not cost-effective. The bottom line, a piece of rope is a lot more accessible. But
plus you can reuse it.
You can reuse it.
Is that wrong?
I mean,
come on, you know they did it, those cheap ass Puritan bastards.
They probably did. Oh my God, that's funny.
So let's talk about what actually happens in this documentary. Or let me just talk shit about the documentary itself.
Oh, please do. Please do.
So what is going on here is that for the purpose of this episode, the creators of Charmed made a documentary that is full of lies. They made a fake documentary. Like, it's not real. It only exists in this episode on the Charmed Ones television. It is not an actual film that you can watch. And it's all just lies. So they put together these images and they paid some narrator to tell a fake story about Mary Esty that didn't happen. I just think that's wild. Like, why? That's just, like, so much effort to be false. And, I mean, it was the late 90s. It's not like you couldn't fact-check things on the internet at this point. Okay. So, anyway, so the documentary claims that when Mary Esty was being accused of witchcraft, she tried to flee to the church for sanctuary, and when trying to enter the church, she was struck by lightning, and the townspeople of Salem took that as proof that she was a witch and burnt her at the stake. Now, I don't know how much burning at the stake this bitch is going to require after being struck by lightning, but apparently the fictitious people of Salem thought it was pretty damn
that, I thought the same thing. I was like, if she got struck by lightning, why did they still need to...
Like, hasn't she been through enough? Dear God.
Oh God, yeah. But this terrible documentary sets in motion a pretty important storyline for Piper. She starts to worry that her powers are evil, that witchcraft comes from evil, because that is what has sort of always been portrayed up until this point. And that's sort of like a breaking the fourth wall statement. Like, this show is one of the first instances of positive representation of witchcraft, I think, other than like Bewitched, I guess, but that's really misogynistic, so I'm not gonna bring that up. And so everything that Piper knows about witches is, you know, this misinformation that we see repeated in this documentary that she's watching, and it causes her to go on this like inward journey. And we see her at a church a lot in this episode, which I think is literally just in relation to the plot, because we don't ever see them go to a church. Well, I guess we do see them go to churches quite a few times.
Very rarely do they enter churches. This is the only plot point throughout the entire series that addresses Christianity's relationship to witchcraft, and they don't even say the word Christianity or Christian or God or Jesus while they're talking about it. Like, they were dancing around the theme pretty intricately here, and mostly just using the terms good and evil and church as this physical representation of good, even though it's so good that they like never fucking go back. So I think that there's a reason that they address this theme in the second episode. I think they just wanted to get it out of the way. Like Tyler said, there before Charmed, there were not a lot of positive representations of witchcraft in pop culture at all. Witches were always the villains in fairy tales, basically, or, you know, just some monster that needed to be defeated by the hero. Having a show about witches being superheroes was pretty progressive at the time. Like Tyler said, I think I can't think of another American example of positive witchcraft other than Bewitched before this. And, you know, we could dedicate an entire another podcast to the virtues and vices of that show. Mm-hmm. But the point is, Bewitched was off the air for
quite some time.
Maybe at least 20 or 25 years before Charmed started. So they had to address whether or not witchcraft was evil right away if they were going to frame a show about witches being forces for good. Like, they had to talk about it. And so I think that's where this plotline comes from. But, you know, I like it because I think it's pretty relatable. Honestly, I grew up in a super Christian household. My mother thought that witchcraft was evil. And I struggled with the idea of being drawn to witchcraft and whether or not it was evil based on the way that, you know, all the just crap I heard growing up. Like, I think it's a very real struggle. And I think it's a struggle that some people have today, whether personally or just about their friends and family. I think there are people who are stuck in the trappings of Christian morals, even while they're trying to move on into something different. And I think that there are Christian people out there who get sincerely worried about their family and friends when they start getting involved in any kind of new magical or spiritual system. So that all being said, even though this is the worst episode of Charmed, I think that there is a really good point to this story.
Yeah, I definitely struggled for a long time when I, not necessarily when I came to witchcraft, but before when I left Christianity. I was raised in a Christian environment as well. I struggled for a number of years with the fear of hell in a really big way, to the point where I had several mental breakdowns about dying because I was afraid of hell, and I had been trained to be afraid of hell. And when I found witchcraft, that was what really brought me out of that. That was my salvation at that point.
Witchcraft is salvation. You heard it here first.
And I have struggled in sort of combating negative stereotypes of witchcraft within my family. I just really relate to Piper in this episode. I understand what she's going through. I know you do too. But I'm debating talking about something very personal. And I want to, because that's the kind of space that I want to be in, but I want to do it in a way that is respectful of the other people involved.
Well, just remember that if it doesn't come out right, you can start over. And if, when you're editing this later, you don't like it, you can take it out.
I have kind of a big family. Most of them are of traditional religious belief systems. And both of my parents have passed away. That is something that is a very integral part of my story. I talk about death and dying and loss a lot because of the things that I've been through. And when my father was ill and passing away, I had just recently started studying Wicca and was dedicating myself to witchcraft and this spiritual path and this way of life. And he and I had had discussions about it because he was a Christian and believed very strongly in his faith. And we talked about it and had a resolve, and he supported me and, you know, could see that this was the first thing in a long time that gave me space to be myself and connected me to something bigger than myself. And we had talked about it, and he gave me express permission. And I was fortunate in that. But later on, when one of my older siblings found out that I was practicing witchcraft when my dad was ill, came to me and told me that she felt the reason my dad was holding on to life so strongly was because I was not a Christian, and that he was afraid he was never going to see me again. And so I had this, not only was I dealing with this traumatic experience of losing my father, but something that I was using to deal with it was being attacked by people outside of my life, right? My spiritual path is the biggest reason that I have credited getting through the things that I have been through. And at every turn when I was losing someone, everybody was just undermining that. And so I really relate to Piper's struggle here of not being feeling that she can confide in someone about these doubts and questions that she's having, because I've been there.
I think it's really important that you shared that with us. I do. It really sucks that your sibling said that to you.
Yeah.
That's like one of those things that'll probably stick with you forever.
Yeah, I mean, it's been 5 years and I've never let it go.
I don't think that they're right, though.
I don't either.
I think that's a terrible example, or a really good example of a terrible thing, I should say, of how certain dogmatic religious beliefs can get so toxic. I have not been afraid of death in a long time, and it's exactly because of my pagan theories, I should call them. I don't necessarily have beliefs. I have theories.
So as we said, Piper goes to a church. She has
So back to the story.
Back to the story. As we said before, Piper goes to this church. She you know, she goes to this church several times, and she has a couple different conversations with this pastor or priest or something that do not make her feel better.
At all. Because that's what ministers do. Make you feel like crap. In my experience, anyway. If your experience is different, I'm very glad.
Yeah, they make her feel like shit. I have definitely also experienced people in a church making me feel like shit. But that's what they thrive off of. So it doesn't make her feel better. And eventually she finds the courage to go into this church after having a conversation with this pastor where he essentially told her to kill herself.
Basically, oh my God. Yeah.
Because he brings up that passage in Exodus where it's like, thou shalt not suffer a witch to live. And Piper's like, what does that mean? And the pastor's like, kill her.
I know. And then immediately after that, he's like, well, I gotta go. You okay?
Yeah, so that's how that goes down for Piper. But eventually she finds the courage to step into the church and miraculously miraculously does not get struck by lightning or burst into flames or be harmed in any way, and she takes us...
Which is now something that Piper also has in common with Mary Esty, just like me. It's the thing that binds the three of us together, not being struck by lightning.
The power of three will set us free.
I'm going to legit get struck by lightning after recording this. I can feel it. I have tempted the fate. Can we backtrack slightly, though, and talk about why she met with this pastor in the first place?
Sure.
She was bringing him food donations from her restaurant for the church, which, okay, there's a couple of things wrong with that, because we've all worked in, like, food service and retail, and you can't just, like, take food that you're supposed to throw away and, like, give it as charity. That aside, also, she just got this job, and she's, like, giving their food away to charity. It's just a little suspicious. So, she's there to donate to this church, basically. And then he's like, you should probably kill yourself. And if that isn't religion in a nutshell, I don't know what is.
Now, let's move on to Prue. What is Prue doing in this episode, Siren?
Okay, so after Prue, like, bangs her ex and throws his alarm clock out the window, which, honestly, I would not even want to get back together with her after that. You know how, like, you bring someone home and you think they're cool and then you have sex with them and then they throw your appliances out the window? Why are you going for a second date? Why? No. That bitch is crazy. But whatever, Andy, you do not have good taste in women. It's fine. So, that all happens. And now, Prue is trying to get a new job. Now, you remember from the last episode that she, like, comically attempted to murder her ex-fiancé, who was also her boss.
Yes, and, I remember that.
You know, then she quit very dramatically. Good for you, Prue. Like, maybe ease off the pedal a little bit there. Slow it down. Maybe just quit without the attempted murder. But, you know, she's a strong, independent 90s career woman. I don't know who I think I am to judge her. Moving on. So, Prue gets into an elevator, and she's apparently got a job interview. And there are a lot of things that bug me about this. But again, I don't know. It's just the whole Prue thing. So, like, all of these scenes with Prue at work are basically catering to women's desire to see themselves powerfully represented in the workplace. And that is important. I do believe that that is important, but it's just, it's such a, like, unrealistic power trip fantasy at some times, and I'm not saying that that's a bad thing, because as I've previously stated, I love it. I love to watch Prue being a bitch. I wish I was as much of a bitch as Prue is, and I strive to be every day. But anyway, that was the big tangent. The point is, this job that Prue is trying to get in this episode, they call her for an interview for a job that she didn't apply for. And then she's, like, verbally abusive in the interview. And then she gets the job. Like, that doesn't happen. Like, that is not real. Like, has anyone out there applied for a job recently? Because even though everywhere is short-staffed, you have to hound your employer's fucking ass, but do so in a respectful way. Like, call them, but don't call them, and be like, hi, I really want this fucking job, but I'm not desperate. I'm not broke. I'm not about to lose my house. It's fine. I'm fine. I have a phone number, but please give me a job, you know? But then Prue is just like, coasts through life being offered jobs by men she verbally abuses. Like, why isn't that my life, is what I'm saying.
Maybe that was Rex's kink, and that's why he gave her...
You know, that tracks. He does really look like that type who needs to be dominated.
Yeah. What? This is a little off topic, but what the fuck is Prue's degree in? What is her degree? Is it art history? That's the only thing that I can think of that would make her this knowledgeable about.
I guess. She says this thing, like, my expertise ranges from some kind of ancient urn to a rookie baseball card, like, Prue's major is just in, like, stuff. Like, she's...
I majored in hoarding. 101.
Basically, she's, like, human Google image search is what she is. Like, you just put it in front of her eyes and she can tell you what it is.
She can also move it if you put her in front of her
Correct.
She's like, I can tell you what this is and I can move it without touching it. So hire me, please and thank you.
Yeah, so we're nailing it down. So Prue majored in stuff and minored in photography. Okay.
Yep. She sure did.
She sure did.
Okay, so what else does Prue do? Can we talk about the elevator thing that she does?
Yes, I do want to talk about the elevator scene because I think it kind of extends the slut-shaming theme that you were picking up on earlier.
Yes, it does.
Doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Doesn't it a little bit? So Prue gets into this elevator and then Andy calls her to be like, bitch, what the fuck did you do with my alarm clock? No, he calls her on the elevator. And also, how does that bitch in 1998 have cell phone reception on her actual fucking juice box shaped cell phone in the 90s? How is that happening?
Well, she's like, excuse me, everyone in the elevator. I have to pull out my high C orange drink and talk on it right now. Right. Oh, God.
Okay. But that little physics quandary aside. So Andy calls her and she's trying to like speak in code. And she's like insulting this job that she didn't even apply for, but got called for an interview for. But she's talking shit about it. That must be nice, Prue. And so then she says on her phone, because Andy accuses her of sneaking out. So she says, I did not sneak out. And she says some other stuff that basically are implying that, like, she had a one-night stand and then snuck out of the apartment. And she's surrounded by, like, all these dudes in the elevator who are all looking at her funny now. And it was just a very... It is almost kind of funny, I guess. Like, I love... absolutely love when I witness a stranger like embarrass themselves, you know, around me, or I get to like learn a juicy detail about their life even though I have no idea who they are. So like that's super fun, you know.
Live for the tea. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I want to know, like if I was in an elevator with Prue, like, and she had that phone call, I would be like flipping my hair behind my shoulder and be like, bitch. So, but yeah, so then, because Prue is an enormous hypocrite, she uses her powers in a way that doesn't make sense at all to skip everyone else's floor on the elevator and move right up to her floor. And, like, how does that make sense, though?
I don't know. How did she do that?
I don't know. Like, she used telekinesis to unpress buttons, or did she use telekinesis to force the elevator to move?
I don't know. I don't know, because later we see her not be able to pick something heavy up. Like, so how does she move an elevator?
Still kind of figuring out how her powers work. But again, aside from the fact that it doesn't make any fucking telekinetic sense, she is a hypocrite because she told Phoebe that she can't have visions, and then she used her powers to throw Andy's alarm clock out the window and move her goddamn elevator. What if she made those other people late for work? That's personal gain, Prue. I'm sorry.
That is personal gain.
So in conclusion, Prue is a slut and a hypocrite and a bitch, and I want to be just like her.
Prue's plot is sort of all over the place, but in a way that's like, we have to have her have a job, you know? Because she's a working girl.
Well, and I get it, too. Because they were setting it up. You know, it was a setup for a story arc. So that's fine. That's fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It makes sense in the overall plot, but I feel like there was no reason for it to bounce all over the place the way that it did. I feel like everything that happened in Prue's storyline in this episode, and this is where I have an issue with the editing of this episode, because it's not good. It could have all been in that one scene. There was no reason for her to have to, like, go on her date and then go back and do it again. I feel like it could have been all continuous, and then when she goes on her date with Andy, she could have gotten the call that she got the job and then rushed off to do something.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Because she goes on that date with Andy and their pagers go off, and Andy's like, oh, dating in the 90s.
Right. That moment when Prue and Andy are on their date and they pull out their pagers and cell phones, that's when it really struck me. Like, those things are fucking huge. Did they really look like that? I mean, I guess they must have, but like, damn. Like, that is a fat ass cell phone. That's what I wrote in my notes. I wrote, that is a fat ass cell phone. And it was.
It was. She, that cell phone thick with two C's.
So I guess what's frustrating about Prue's having like two separate stories at once.
Yes.
And that's happening like while the scenes are jumping back and forth all over the place. It's not like you can't follow it. It's just like, why did you do this?
Yeah, why did you cut it this way? I guess
is the question. So it's about Prue getting her job, but it's also about Prue not knowing what the fuck she's doing with Andy and being kind of a cunt about it. So in between the process of her trying to get this job, she's like being just kind of bitchy to Andy, who's just like, hey, I know we had sex, I'd like to keep dating you. And she's like, what does that mean? Okay. Here's something that I do not enjoy about season one. And it is the fact that Prue says the same line to Andy twice per episode in literally every episode.
My life has gotten so complicated.
My life has gotten kind of complicated. My life is just a little complicated. Like, she says it literally twice an episode to Andy until he finds out that she is a witch. Just over and over again. Like, I would be like, I don't know. I don't know what he sees in her, honestly, except for the fact that she's like this hypocrite, powerful, attractive slut. God, I wish I was her. But other than that, I don't know what he sees in her because she just keeps being like, I'm complicated. And I would be like, I get it. It's boring.
I'm not like other girls. Can we talk about the paint thing? Can we talk about the paint thing that happens with Prue? What the fuck?
I do want to talk about the paint thing because I'm going to call out some continuity bullshit, but I want to hear you talk about it first.
I just don't get it. I don't get it. First of all, the effect does not look great, which I'll give a pass because 90s. But could there be a more obvious way to be like, I can move shit with my mind than to throw up your hands when there's paint coming at you and push it at someone else? And why is it her hands? Why is it her hands? Why is it her hands?
Let's talk about the fact that it's her hands. Okay. So I'm skipping ahead here, but toward the end of season one, Prue, quote unquote, gains the ability to move things with her hands. And they say, you've never moved anything with your hands before. That's why you were startled and let those monsters kidnap that boy. But anyway, spoilers. Except, so they say that then, but we clearly see her moving this paint with her hands right now. And then again, of course, she was moving her hands a lot in episode one and making things happen. So just like, what is the tea, Prue? Like, how does your fucking power work? Okay. Like your eyes, your hands, like what? What's going on?
Your eyes, your hands, your nose, your kneecaps. What the fuck's happening with your powers?
Yeah, basically.
What is happening with your powers?
Okay. So the paint thing was stupid, obviously, but it's foreshadowing for the larger story arc of Rex and Hannah and Bucklands and everything going on there. So we see the paint thing happen, and then we don't exactly know what's going on with Rex and Hannah, her new coworkers, but we know, or we are led to suspect, that they know that she's a witch, and then we don't know what their intentions are behind that yet. So it all has a point. It's the beginning of a story arc. It's just somewhat awkwardly executed. But again, we're forgiving. It's season one, episode two. We're trying to be forgiving.
I feel like I don't want to forgive some of the editing choices they make because it happens for the rest of the show.
Oh, well, okay. So there's that.
But let's talk about Phoebe and what she's doing now. Because, again, we see her not being able to hold down a steady piece of employment. Because for some reason, she's working at the restaurant with Piper. But then she's also trying to be like a fashion model. And
like, what is she doing?
And she's trying to play the lottery. So like, I don't understand.
I think what's really going on in this episode is they were just trying to highlight the fact that basically Phoebe is like a screw up piece of crap. That's what's going on here. This bitch makes bad decisions, but she's kind of fun to be around. Like, we all have that friend, you know.
this is the scene. So Phoebe's plot line is the one where we meet the villain of the episode. We meet this photographer, Stefan, who is supposed to be, like, sex incorporated, but
he was just, I don't like anything about his face.
I don't either. I don't. And no shade to the actor, because I'm sure he's great. But, like, I feel like a lot of the times where there's a guy where the charmed ones are like, oh, my God, look at that hottie. He's kind of bland looking, you know?
Uh-huh. Well, I guess, like, again, 90s. I don't know. Like, hairstyles and...
If your hair could part down the middle in the 90s, you were a heartthrob.
Oh, my God. Okay, so... listen. I had a kind of a thing for literally every guy who parted their hair down the middle in the 90s. Okay, so shut up. And also, my hair is currently parted down the middle. So I just don't know what you're trying to say.
To be fair, the script is over your face in our Zoom call a little bit. So it's like...
Okay, so basically you're talking shit about my hair because you didn't know that it was there, is what you're saying. Okay, no, it's fine. That's fine. I'm fine. I'm not upset.
I'm sorry. I... So Phoebe's plotline really is just to get us to the villain in this episode, I think. Because eventually she goes to, like, take a picture with Stefan, who is Javna, who looks real crusty when he becomes...
He's not cute at all.
Not cute.
Oh, do you know what we have to talk about first, though? Okay, so when Tyler and I were coming up with the idea for the podcast, we decided we wanted to keep a random boyfriend count. Okay, so this is where it all began. Okay, so we're backtracking to the start of the episode. Phoebe has a premonition about a guy named Alec, who officially begins... the random boyfriend count. Phoebe has a drink with this guy. We're assuming she goes home with him because she's a promiscuous slut, whore, free spirit of the 90s. And then we never see him again, even though he was important enough for her to have a premonition about him. But next day, she's moving on to demons, which is unfortunately kind of her thing.
Yep. Oh my God, so does that mean... I mean, do we count Stefan / Javna in the boyfriend tally?
Well, I don't think so.
No.
Because, you know, she was really just using him to be famous.
True. Hmm.
Because that happens.
Anyway.
But I think we're definitely counting Alec as random boyfriend number one.
So ding one in the boyfriend tally. I'm gonna put in like 80s porn music here.
I love 80s porn. So Phoebe is really all over the place in this episode. I mean, I guess her overall story is about her getting to meet the demon and everything and being in danger, but there's some other stuff that happens. And I think really Phoebe in this episode, they're addressing the why don't they just use witchcraft to get whatever they want issue. And their answer to that is clumsy and senseless.
Mm-hmm.
And basically the answer to that is why don't they do this? And the answer is because we said so. You know?
Yeah, that's very true. And that's the biggest difference. I think, I mean, other than all the demons and the fantasy explosions and stuff that happen in this show, one of the biggest difference between actual witchcraft and witchcraft as it's portrayed in Charmed is the personal gain thing.
I never understood the personal gain thing. But, you know, Charmed, like I said before this, Charmed was my introduction to witchcraft. It was the thing that made me, you know, decide to give it a chance. And so I really kind of bought into the no personal gain thing for... I want to say a hot, like, 3 seconds. But yeah, you're right. It's a huge difference. They say no personal gain throughout the life of the show so many annoying times, even though they hypocritically flout that rule every chance they get.
Yeah.
Usually while telling the other two that they have to follow it. But yeah, like actual witchcraft is about self-improvement, self-empowerment. You know, going for the things that you want and getting them. So the no personal gain thing here is a little weird. And I guess what's really wrong with it is that the people in Charmed who use magic for personal gain are always portrayed as the evil ones.
Yeah, that's super problematic.
That's pretty problematic.
I have chatted with people before. So there's one particular instance. I don't even remember this guy's name. But when I was kind of a floozy myself, I was chatting with this guy.
No shame.
When I was chatting with this guy, I had sort of like offhandedly mentioned witchcraft in some way, or maybe tarot or something. And he started to like nod to the fact that maybe he practiced. And then as we talked about it more, he was like, oh, but I don't use my powers for myself. I only use them for other people. And I was like, why?
I mean, I think that's fine. That's valid if that's what you want.
But it just... But... I very much got the vibe that it was because of this show.
Oh, right? No.
I very much got the vibe that it was... Like, I wanted to tell him, I wanted to be like, this isn't Charmed. Like, it's not gonna... nothing's gonna happen to you if you try to use your powers for yourself. If you try to, like... And I hesitate to use the word powers because, I mean, we don't have... actual special powers, but
we all have special powers.
Yeah, so this guy, I guess the point of the story is I've had people tell me before that they can't use their powers for themselves because they'll get in some sort of cosmic trouble, which is not accurate. That's not true.
Well, that doesn't really track.
No, it doesn't. That doesn't make any sense. It's not this forbidden thing to want to use the gift of magic to help yourself.
Well, so if we say that magic is something that's accessible to everyone, which I believe that it is.
Absolutely, I agree.
Then, I don't know, that's just sort of saying, like other parts of you. Now, obviously, not everyone has everything I'm about to mention here, but that's almost like saying, oh, yes, I have these hands, but I can only use them to work for other people, or... I have this singing voice, but I can only do it for the enjoyment of others, not myself. It's just kind of dumb.
I know how to whittle, but I can only whittle soap. Like,
for other people.
For other people. And I always smell like body odor and regret.
I have these beautiful photos of cats, but I can only share them with the internet. I can't look at them myself. That's a lie. That would never happen.
So I agree with that. Phoebe's storyline is very much both to get us the villain and to address the personal gain issue.
So let's talk about how that manifests. So they have her play the lottery, and the way it turns out and the moral of the episode is one of the worst parts of it. Mm-hmm. Okay, like it really is. So Phoebe goes to play the lottery and she has a vision of what the winning numbers would be, which, like, bitch, good for you. And then she buys a ticket with those numbers on them. And because she's such a dear, sweet soul, she also tells this old people who just willingly volunteer the information that they're about to lose their house to her.
Yeah, that's
weird.
She
tells them to buy this lottery ticket, too. It is weird, but let me tell you what. I sell lottery tickets to old people all the time, and they are always volunteering information about their lives that I do not give a fuck about. I don't. I don't fucking care. So those old people are legit. But Phoebe buys the lottery ticket, and she knows it's going to win because she has psychic powers. But oh no, that's personal gain. Rat.
You can't intentionally use the powers for your own personal gain.
Can we just skip ahead to how it ends?
Yeah, if you want, like, to talk about how it ends, yeah.
We're all over the place. Okay, so this is what happens at the very end of the episode, okay? The winning numbers come on the television, and Phoebe pulls out her lottery ticket, and she's like, I won. And then she looks at her lottery ticket, and the numbers on it magically disappear. Just magically disappear. Why? Who did that? Did, like, God do that? Or, like... Well, who did that?
Who made magic that did that?
Was it Grams's ghost? Like, who? Like, just magic? Like, the sentient force of magic that doesn't approve of you playing the lottery? It did that? Like, why did that happen? It makes no sense. And then, you know, Piper's all smug. Like, she hasn't been having her own dark night of the soul this entire episode. And she's like, you can't use your powers for personal gain. And then they all just look at Phoebe like, oh, it's so charming and adorable that you're such a scamp. But the point is, she doesn't win the lottery because her ticket gets magically erased. We have no idea why. It does not answer the question of why they can't use their powers for personal gain. It's just there and it's annoying.
It's super annoying. That whole trope is really annoying throughout the whole show, to be honest, which I'm sure we'll talk about a ton more.
Just constantly. I can't wait to talk about every time they break their own stupid rule.
So after we sort of go through all of these different storylines and we start to get to the end of the episode, we then have Mulder and Scully, I mean, Trudeau and Morris, outside Quake on a stakeout, and Andy sees Prue and he really wants to go talk to her, but Scully is not happy about this. So Andy eventually goes inside and Morris stays outside to like do some actual fucking police work.
It is a little sketch. Like, I mean the current climate on the parts of the internet that I'm on is that we don't necessarily trust police officers at the moment.
No, we do not.
But okay, so it is a little sketch that he's like on a stakeout looking for like a kidnapper or murderer or someone who like does horrible things to young women, and then he's just like, oh, you know what, that's important, but I also really need to go talk to this chick I just fucked. So can you like stay here while I go deal with that?
Can you like do our job while I go try to get laid again, please?
Right. Okay, so that is problematic, but it leads to the best part of this episode. It's one of my favorite parts of the whole show, nested in the worst episode, but it's really good. So what happens is Prue and Phoebe are in the kitchen at Quake, harassing Piper. And she's, like, freaking out because her default state is just dread and panic. And Andy bursts into the kitchen to talk to Prue, which is such an entitled white straight man thing to do. I'm sorry. Not sorry. And, of course, because white straight men never look where they're going, he just charges into someone carrying a bunch of freshly cleaned plates. Like, the dish room worked really hard on those, and then they go flying everywhere, and then Piper panics and freezes the room. And what follows, I just think, is, like, super funny.
So really funny.
It really so is, but funny. You can also, like, feel the panic.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Here's my question. Why does Piper's power only work in the room that she's in? Why?
I don't know. This is the episode where that gets explained, and then they don't really challenge it.
And I just don't understand. I don't understand why, but I also, it is something that I like about her power. I just don't understand why it's like that.
I mean, I guess, like, they wanted to give her some kind of limitation. If she could freeze, like, all of time for as long as she wanted, she could really do anything.
Yeah, some hella damage for sure.
Yeah. And I mean, I think her power is the coolest. As much as I would love to, like, throw my latest tricks alarm clock out the window, I would love to freeze time.
I would love to freeze time so much. So much. Yeah. All of the powers are amazing. All the powers are amazing. But that was the one that I feel like is actually the most useful.
Yeah.
For real life, other than, like, orbing, which we'll get into later, but
right. But I mean, just like, you know, once you're past the whole like I'm freaking out because I'm a witch thing, freeze the demon, stab it in the fucking throat, and we're done. I'm done. I took care of it. You're welcome.
But demons are a lot more complicated to kill in the first couple of scenes than they are later.
Yeah, I know. Later you can just like kill them with a shoe.
Yeah, it's like, let me poke you with an umbrella and you're gonna die. Like,
I would die of embarrassment. Oh my god.
Let me just shove this umbrella up your ass and you'll just explode in my living room.
Okay. Well, it started off in a good place, but
oh my god. Oh, I'll cut that. Oh my god.
No, you must include that. So the kitchen at Quake is frozen, just the kitchen. And then, you know, Prue looks outside and the dining room is not at all frozen, which only makes Piper panic harder. We're also introduced to this concept that good witches don't freeze.
Oh, yeah.
In this episode, which they're, you know, they just figure out. And that is used a couple of times as a plot device. So it's important to call it out now.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it's kind of like, why? Because good witches aren't immune to causing premonitions, and good witches can be thrown around the house when Prue gets, like, pissy. But Piper can't use her powers on them, which is, I don't know, interesting. But again, I guess they had to nerf her a little bit so that she wouldn't become an all-powerful panicky god.
Yeah. And also, she wouldn't have help if the good witches froze too.
That's true.
Like, all-powerful god aside, Piper's not that great in the beginning with combat. So if her sisters froze too, and she doesn't know how to unfreeze them, freezing the demons won't do any good because they can't fucking do anything until they're not frozen
Piper
anymore.
Never gets super into, like, the physical combat, and I really just feel like it was because Holly Marie Combs was just not feeling it.
Probably not.
Like, I really think that that's what it was. Because the other three do, like, all these crazy stunts sometimes. And Piper's like, can I just put up my hands and then I think I'll stand here. Thank you. But I would like to do another death scene.
I would like to do another death scene.
She dies a lot. Piper dies the most. Okay.
She does.
She dies, she like, does. Twice in season four. Anyway.
It's because the middle sister doesn't matter.
Yeah. So the tension in the frozen kitchen scene arrives when Morris comes looking for Andy because he's like, bro, we need to be focusing on the stakeout, which is why I also left the car. But there is something important here, something that I took note of. Okay, so when Andy, I forget which one spooks him. I think it's actually Andy. Okay, so demon Stefan, photographer, Javna demon guy, not hot. He's at Quake. Scoping out his latest victim at this point, right? And then he sees either Andy or Morris's police badge, and then he gets scared. And then he leaves. So this demon is afraid of the human police.
Good point. Do you think maybe it's because if he got captured by the police, he could not drain youth from people anymore and he would get ugly?
I guess. It's just interesting. Like, the point I guess I'm making is that, like, wow, Stefan / Javna, you are kind of a little bitch. Because
yeah,
all of the other demons are like, wah, 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 I can be easily killed by a tiny blade or an umbrella or a shoe, but I am completely immune to gunshots. You know?
It makes no sense.
None whatsoever.
It makes no sense.
Shows like this have really given people a warped idea of how much damage a gun can actually do to you. As opposed to, like, a blade. Which is kind of serious.
Yeah, actually. It's kind of a big
the
deal.
The desensitizing to gun violence. I think shows like this definitely contribute to that. Because a gun will fuck you up. It's not just this thing that, like, because you're a demon, it's fine. You just kind of have to, like, go to the tailor and get your shirt patched.
Yeah, no, it'll mess up
your
shit.
Anyway, I did not mean to get super serious there. But the point is that gun violence is serious. That's what I'm saying.
Gun violence is serious.
And Javna / Stefan knows that, which is why he flees the police.
Solid point, Siren. Solid point.
I know.
I think that is why most people flee the police.
It is. It is. I don't want to put myself on the same side as, like, Javna here,
no. Absolutely.
Not
no,
at all.
Because he is taking advantage of people.
They can go ahead and shoot him because he's ugly. I mean, because he's bad.
He's so bad. So bad looking. So, I feel like there's a lot of filler in this episode. Piper, by this point, or maybe by the next day, or whatever it is, has found old Brittany, and is like, I know this is...
It happens at the end of the church scene.
Yeah, it does happen after she's done with the church.
After she realizes that she's not going to get struck by lightning.
Yes. After she realizes, hey, that documentary on Mary Esty was not the most accurate thing. Hey, look, this old woman kind of looks like my friend.
And she has the same hand tattoo, the minor plot point tattoo that may or may not have to do with the very lazy title.
With the very lazy title.
Yeah.
So Phoebe is off doing her thing. And then Prue comes home. Piper is there with old Brittany and is like, this is that Brittany. And Prue's like, no fucking way. And Piper is like, yes fucking way. Let's go upstairs and check the book because this doesn't make any sense. And then...
Also, I'm sorry, your new narrative flow is beautiful. But this is something I found myself wondering. If Brittany is their friend, why don't they know that she's missing?
I didn't think about that.
Like, her boyfriend reports it to the cops.
Yeah.
And one of those cops, Prue, is kinda fucking.
Yeah.
So there is just all this opportunity for them to know that Brittany is missing, but it's, like, not even on their radar. Like, if they knew she was missing, and then this woman showed up with their tattoo, and they're like, oh, we're newly witches, this makes sense. I feel like they would be like, okay, yeah, it's probably Brittany. But when the old woman is there, and Prue is like, no, it's not Brittany. Like, to me, that just really said, they have no idea that she is missing. They do not care about her as a friend at all.
I mean, I feel like that they don't really care about a lot of their friends at all, because
no.
Their friends get into trouble a lot. Or they hang out with them one time and then we never see them again. So, just like Brittany. And Brittany happened to be in a lot of trouble and they didn't care about her. So, Prue is like, no fucking way, this is Brittany. This bitch needs to be in a nursing home. And Piper's like, no, I asked her a bunch of questions, like who's president and how many fingers. And they go upstairs to the Book of Shadows to try to figure out what's going on. They realize that Javna is the only demon that can do this, and that he uses the evil eye to suck the youth out of people. And there's a spell that the Prophet Muhammad used called the Hand of Fatima, and I'm pretty sure they're pronouncing that wrong. I think it's Fatima. Let's talk about that, because I feel like this is another instance of this buzzword thing that Charmed likes to do. So I want to hear your thoughts on this because I didn't do any research.
It is Fatima. That, okay, the Prophet Muhammad thing is interesting because, so it is associated with him, but I just think it's funny that, first of all, they're suddenly saying that the father of Islam is a witch. I feel like the Muslims may not care for that, some of them. And... you know, he's a dude.
And the craft is a chick thing.
The craft is a chick thing, you know. Oh, girls only. So there's that whole thing. That's just like, that's just a slice of the inner, of the whole thing. Go on.
Oh, I did my thing already. I want to hear you talk about this because I don't have notes on it. I just knew that it was wrong.
They know that Javna is the person kidnapping women, even though they didn't know it was happening at all because their friend was missing and they didn't know or care. But they get this spell together to fight him. Okay? And they say the Hand of Fatima. It is a mispronunciation. It is pronounced the Hand of Fatima. And I did some research on it, and I was a little bit surprised by what I found. I was expecting some serious cultural appropriation going on here, and I...
Me too.
I was sort of right, but also kind of not. And I will explain that. So, Fatima was actually the daughter of the Prophet Muhammad. So I think that's why they sort of threw out his name like that.
Oh, okay.
And I don't know exactly why this symbol came to be associated with her. But the Hand of Fatima is also called the Hamsa. And it is a symbol. Perhaps you've seen it. It's kind of looks like a hand stylized like a flower. Basically,
is it the one with the pinky and the thumb are like curved out?
The pinky and the thumb are turned out and they're like the same size. And then it has like the three fingers pointing up and it looks very floral. And it usually has an eye where the palm is. Mm-hmm. So that is the Hamsa, or the Hand of Fatima. And the symbol does have a history of being used as a protection amulet against the evil eye.
Oh.
So they weren't entirely wrong there. Now, the evil eye in, you know, folklore was not necessarily a demon staring at you until you got really old and he sucked your youth away. But the evil eye is a thing that people believed in, and the Hand of Fatima was something that they used to guard against it. So we're a little bit accurate here. Here is where it gets interesting. I was very concerned with it being culturally appropriated by this show. Let me tell you, the Hand of Fatima's entire history is cultural appropriation. It has been appropriated so many times that you can barely even claim that it's possible to do it anymore. Okay?
Oh my God.
So it originated in Islam, being associated with the daughter of Muhammad. But it started to be used as an amulet by Jewish people. It was the Jews who started using it to protect them against the evil eye. And then it was appropriated from the Jews by Christians.
What a shock.
And I know. And from there, it has currently been appropriated by Wiccans and is actually used by some Wiccans today. So I think the story, as I have it pieced together, is that in Muslim culture, it was art. Jewish culture turned it into, like, a spell or amulet. Christian culture turned it into sort of a artistic... You know how Christians, like, they don't use magic, but they do?
Yes.
That kind of thing?
Yes.
And now Wiccans are like, no, we're definitely using it for magic. Okay. So the point is, the Hand of Fatima has been appropriated by literally everyone.
That's a little sad. It's a little sad.
It is. It also is more often associated with women than men, which I thought was interesting here. The Hand of Fatima was also used as a charm to help a woman get married to a good man as opposed to just a man, because marriage, back in the time it was used this way, was a woman's best protection, basically. So it was supposed to help you find a marriage to a man who would make you happy, and it was also supposed to help you have healthy children who didn't die, which again would secure your relationship with your man. It is very patriarchal. Obviously, this form of protection.
When your dad sells you for, you know, a couple of really nice goats,
yeah,
the Hand of Fatima will make sure that your husband doesn't beat, rape, and kill you.
Yes.
Cool.
Of course. So now we know that historically, forms of love magic originated as women's ways to protect themselves, to get places in life. So this is actually an early example of Jewish people using love magic, Jewish women using love magic to try to secure better futures for themselves, which I think is, it's kind of empowering, actually, you know, because these women couldn't change the culture that they were in, but they used magic to exploit it to their advantage. And so that's the history of the Hand of Fatima that we're talking about in this episode.
Amazing. Yeah. Really great research, Siren. I'm glad that...
Thank you.
I'm glad that you did that, because I did not. I had meant to, but I hate this episode so much that I didn't want to do anything with it anymore.
I am fucking on top of it. Now, since we're talking about the research I did, I also looked into seeing if there was any kind of creature named Javna who had anything to do with it, and guess what? Javna was a completely original thought. The only thing that you will find when you Google Javna is literally this episode and some, like, weird art business.
Hmm. I guess since I'm the only thing I think of when I hear Javna is Java, and maybe that's because I'm a barista, but...
That could be because you're a barista.
But we have old Brittany furthering the plot again, and... She recognizes the address and has a, like, Alzheimer's dementia freak out. And this sends Piper and Prue off to go save Phoebe. Surprise, surprise. Phoebe's in trouble.
Do you know what,
let's
though?
Go help her.
I do have to appreciate the fact that Phoebe wrote the address she was going to down and left it there for her sisters. Because do you know how often I would like go to just throughout my life, how often I went to sketchy places and told nobody that I was going there?
I always made a point, especially if I was going on a random hookup, to let somebody know where I was going or who I was going with, or like send screenshots of the person's face to be like, if I go missing, this person probably did it.
Well, you are a very smart person and our listeners should take after you and not me. Literally once when I was 16, I met a 32-year-old guy in a parking lot that I had met on the internet.
Oh my God, Siren!
And I told no one because I knew all my friends would tell me it was a terrible idea, which it was. And then you know what? I can't even get into it. But the point is that I learned some things about this guy and then I got very afraid. And then I threatened him with magic, actually, is how the story ended. And then he left me alone.
Good for you.
So that's how that all ties into this podcast. Anyway, moving on.
Moral of the story, Siren makes poor choices and I never do anything wrong ever.
I am going to sound like this like dumb slut throughout this entire podcast, but I swear.
I am a regular Blanche Devereaux, so I'm right there with you. So the rescue and the showdown with Javna happens. It's another power of three spell, which is happening a lot. And my question is,
why is it Prue's hand? Is that what you're about to say?
No.
Damn it.
My question is, if the Charmed Ones hadn't been born yet, why did the witches before them write so many spells that were dependent on the power of three?
That is a difficult to answer question, and I think it's because much of the show is contrived.
Anyway, what is your note about Prue's hand, I would like to know.
Okay, I did write a note about Prue's hand, because when they're doing this power of three spell that does not invoke the power of three in the wording, and in fact invokes the name of only one woman, the magic that defeats Javna comes specifically out of Prue's hand and no one else's. And this is the beginning of something that continues literally until Prue dies and is replaced with Paige. When you watch the first three seasons of this show, Prue is the most important character in every single episode, and it is always framed that way, I swear to God. Always. Prue is always the one who takes down the demons. Prue is always the one who has the most going on in her story. It's just the way they do things. And I really feel like it begins right here when they do a quote-unquote power of three spell.
It does invoke the power of three, though. It does. They do say power of three. It's like, it's something like, evil eye, look upon thee, may they soon extinguish be, bend thy will to the power of three, something, something, something.
Eye of earth, evil and a curse.
Yes.
Okay, you're right. It does say power of three. I'm sorry. It actually, what it doesn't say is Fatima.
It doesn't. Well, they wouldn't have said it right anyway, so.
Is it weird that the Prophet Muhammad invoked the power of three instead of his own daughter's name? Is that what happened?
I guess so. Let me just call on this power that doesn't exist yet because these women haven't been born.
Right. Okay, well, anyway, I was wrong about that, but my point is, they do the spell together, but the power comes out of Prue's hand, and that kind of thing carries all the way until she dies.
Yeah. It sure does. It sure does. Doesn't make any sense, because they're all equally important.
Well, it does make sense, because she's the best. But you're right.
Well, that's an opinion. Honestly, I feel like that might have been a Shannon Doherty thing. Because she had...
Possibly, but she wasn't even, like, directing at this point, you know? Like, it was all brand new.
But I feel like she might have had kind of the most star power of the three at this time. Because of 90210, you know?
Yeah, she did have 90210, but, like, Alyssa Milano had Who's the Boss? I don't know what Holly was doing before that.
She was on Picket Fences.
I don't even know what that is.
Yeah, so long story short, they save Phoebe, kill Javna with Prue's hand, with all these like salamanders and worms and stuff and this beam of light on her fingers. Yeah. Doesn't make any sense. Doesn't look like the hand of Fatima at all.
It does not. It does not look like it. Mm-mm.
And then we get outside and, oh my God, so awkward running into your boyfriend at a crime scene.
Again. So let's talk about this shoddy piece of police work. Okay. Like, Andy is really not crediting his profession in this episode. So the cops show up at their crime scene. Although I guess there's no evidence at this crime scene, so is it really?
I mean, there's all the, like, candles and stuff.
They show up at their suspected crime scene, and then, you know, the sisters are there, and they have this bogus story about their car breaking down, and then Andy reaches in and turns the car on, so he knows they're lying, and then they're just like, well, we better go, and he says, yeah, you'd better go, and then they leave. In what universe does that happen? I mean, I guess if you're, like, fucking the cops, then you can, like, quickly leave a crime scene. But there were other cops there. So, like, I don't know. I don't think you show up at the den of a suspected kidnapper and find people there who are obviously lying to you, and then you let them leave. That just doesn't track for me. That seems like really shoddy police
work. It's very shoddy police work. But as you said... Mm-hmm. The cops in Charmed are really good at finding bodies, but not so much at anything else.
Yeah. So I guess in addition to not being able to play the lottery because God says so, the moral of this episode is it's better to be fucking the cops.
Agreed.
Did I get that right? Is that right?
Did I do it right? Maybe in this climate you might not want to be involved with fucking... I mean, if you're married to a cop, good for you. Hope you're happy. Not the best profession. Also, we should mention that Brittany's not old anymore. She's back to normal. And she stays the fuck away from the Hallowells, which is probably a good choice.
I know. I guess maybe I would... Maybe Brittany didn't want to see them anymore. You know, that's a possibility I didn't entertain.
Yeah. That's so, like, traumatic. Like, why would you want to hang out with the people that, like...
The Hallowells are the last people she talks to before she gets abducted. And then she gets drained of her life force. And then she wakes up alone in their house, not knowing what happened to her. Maybe she broke up with them.
That's, I definitely think, a good enough reason.
You know what? Good for you, Brittany. She does not need them in
Cut
her
life, out those toxic, you know, friendships. Yes? God.
Seriously. Oh my God. They would just get her killed somewhere down the road. So
honestly. So, Siren, what would you rate this episode?
Hmm.
Anything out of 10. Anything that comes to your mind.
Okay. I would give this episode probably 5 out of 5 religious crises, but 0 out of 10 lottery tickets.
I think I would give this episode 0 Javna chip frappuccinos.
Well, that is not enough frappuccinos, Tyler. I'm going to need more than 0.
And I don't, oh God, I don't even know. Just a 0 out of 0 across the board for me. There were a couple.
Just zeros across the
zero,
board.
Zeros across the board. I don't like it. I didn't like this one. But there were some, like, plot points that I enjoyed talking about, so. Mm-hmm, I guess, like, I give it 1 lightning bolt striking Mary Esty. Just the one.
And which, of course, wasn't enough, because she had to be burned at the stake after. I guess, if I had any parting comments about this episode, it would be something like... Javna posing as a photographer in this studio with this nice car and draining the life force of young women is really a commentary on this very real feminist issue of the patriarchy and capitalism draining the life force away from women until they're old and ugly and not useful anymore, and so they can just be discarded. And the only thing that can really defeat it is... a community of sisterhood, uniting women together. So mote it be.
So mote it be. Menstrual power shrine. Circle of life. Fertility. That's the end of my bit.
Yes, I just really didn't feel like I had spouted enough feminist ranting.
SJW.
Social justice witch.
Social justice witch in the house. Okay, Siren, where can the people find your shit?
Oh my gosh. So if you want to follow me, I run the Facebook page, Siren Spectacular, Non-Binary Meme Witch, where I make all these memes and I'm really cool. You can also follow me on Twitter at Siren Spectacular or watch my Coven's YouTube channel, Millennial Incantations.
You can follow me at Tyler Carson Evans on Instagram. Keep an eye out for Witch Bitches Review on all social media platforms coming soon.
WBR!
WBR, if you would like to ask us a question or have a suggestion for something you'd like us to talk about, feel free to send us an email at witchbereview@gmail.com. And until next time.
Bye!
Are you a good witch or a bad witch?